Hi, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. Before I bring up my guest this evening, Nina Simons, I would like to share with you my three-minute statement to the Navy when they were here March 13th to hear our responses to their recent plans to perform war games along our coast from San Diego to Alaskan borders. Actually, they are doing this along every coast, everywhere. These exercises are close into coastlines and right in the middle of migratory paths of whales and many other creatures. So, a pregnant whale is forced to swim through their god-awful sonic booms and sonar, which drives them mad. Toxic mixtures from the ammunitions dispersed everywhere, and whatever else we can imagine, all the way down to her birthing place. And then, with her little baby by her side, the two of them go through this same hell all the way up the coast. It is a constant hell for them. And for what? So this is my three-minute statement to the Navy. I add there were many women there and a couple of men as well who spoke forcefully and from their hearts. As I speak to the Navy, I can't imagine what the getting ready for these meetings must be like for you, knowing each time you will be facing a hostile audience. It can't be easy. And no matter who you represent, you are in fact each a human being faced with the same concerns as the rest of us. Representing the Navy does not give you an out regarding the facts about living on a planet in crisis, which I am sure you are well aware of. We cannot fail to see or read about the diminishing of all life in a patriarchal world, where life itself has no meaning, species rapidly disappearing, and Earth covered with poisons and toxins and radiation, lack of clean air and water, loss of fish in a dying ocean, an increasingly violent climate everywhere. Children starving and dying and being tortured along with their mothers and fathers, surrounded by war and the industries and corporate powers that serve war, polluting and poisoning life for generations to come. As the greed of capitalist patriarchal power continues to destroy life at a faster and faster rate, until it is done, it seems, all in the name of money. In such a state of emergency, who in their right minds would feel the need to practice war games? Surely the Navy is not planning to wage war once again on this suffering earth. That would surely hasten death for all of us, your children and grandchildren, as well as mine. I think that probably the biggest drive underneath the patriarchal need to kill something so you can demonstrate your so-called power is money, don't you think? It seems these intelligent, feeling, and caring creatures in the ocean you so casually intend to take, our ancestors, are of little consequence to you or the Navy, because the prospect of creating and selling weapons and conducting war games is such big business. I suppose playing with these new weapons in the ocean and killing has its own rewards for those who love power and killing. Oh, we just need to practice for just in case. Who knows who might be trying to attack us? Yeah, right. We are the most powerful and lawless nation on the earth. Who would dare such a thing? Excuses, excuses. How about instead saying no more to war and killing? How about finding the heart inside you that connects to all life? How about standing up for life? Finding the gratitude inside yourselves for the gift of life on this beautiful and suffering planet, with its creatures that have been so amazingly put together, including our own bodies, for all things to work in harmony with each other. I invite you to open your eyes to the beauty that surrounds us, to look inside yourselves and find the courage to dare to take a stand to support life, rather than destroy it. May it be so.
We are walking in a circle are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land. We are loving one another. We are crossing the divide. We are walking with our mother and our sisters by our side. We're a circle in a spiral that's evolving towards the light. We're a bridge between the sunshine and the everlasting night. We are women of all nations. We are straight and we are gay, liberating generations at the dawn of a new day. We are dancing in a circle. We are dancing all around. We are dancing in a circle to create a higher ground. We're embracing one another as we're spinning round the sun. And we love the earth, our mother, and all creation. We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land. To create the promised land.
Hello again. We were listening to Genevieve Vaughn, We Are Walking in a Circle, who writes, I have devoted my life for the last 30 years to promoting the idea of a woman's led gift economy as a way of creating social change. Nina Simons is an award-winning social entrepreneur who stands for women's leadership, the natural world, relational intelligence, connecting across differences, and reclaiming the feminine. In 1990, she co-founded Bioneers with Kenny Ausubel, which identifies, gathers, and disseminates breakthrough people and projects that reimagine how to live on Earth and with each other. Bioneers Media ignite widespread engagement and help redefine and inspire greater leadership. Now Nina's focus is on women, nature, leadership, diversity, and justice. She co-founded Cultivating Women's Leadership Trainings with Toby Hertzlick in 2006 and continues to facilitate trainings and speak widely. Her anthology book, Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart, is being used in courses on leadership, diversity, and women's studies. Welcome, Nina, to Women's Voices.
Well, thank you, Janie. Good to be here with you.
Thank you. It's lovely to have you, and I'm grateful you could take the time to be on Women's Voices once again.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure and my purpose, I should say.
Yes, that's true. You know,
it's a win-win. That's how we know it's right.
That's exactly right. You know, my first question, given that this is Women's Voices, is what part did your mother play in your becoming the most engaged woman that you are?
Oh, my mother, whose name is Rhea, the mother of the gods, my mother played a very strong part in helping me become who I am. For much of my early years, she was what I considered to be my negative role model. So I became everything sort of the opposite to how I perceived her. But as I've really grown from a young woman into the young elder, yelder woman that I am now, I see that my mother gifted me with a really questing spirit, a really curious intellect and love of learning, and a deeply playful and creative sensibility, and a heart that just won't quit, and a body that I trust to always tell me the truth, and she really taught me that too. So I've come to realize that I'm much more like her than I ever thought in my young years, and that I admire her tremendously. Thanks
wonderful.
For asking. It's nice to say.
Yeah, wonderful. How wonderful that you've come to this place, too. That's lovely.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate. Not without a lot of work.
You know, when I try to bring your voice up, I get an echo. Is there anything on your end that you could think that might come from?
No, I don't think there is. I heard a little bit of an echo, too.
So you're not on a speakerphone?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, okay. Now it's gotten better.
Oh, good.
Well, you know, we talked about what we're going to talk about, and I just, what I just said about the Navy was just a piece of it, that we're facing such horrific events all around the earth, global warming and severe climate change and continuing wars with our leaders, which our leaders are promoting, and the Keystone Pipeline, and a president who wants more money for nuclear power and weapons, and who just signed on to give Monsanto freedom from being sued. And we've got the dreadful TPP coming up, and the Navy continues to cause great suffering.
And the Supreme Court is making horrible decisions.
Yes, yes, yes.
The litany goes on and on, doesn't it?
It does. And yeah. So, first of all, how can we have any talk without acknowledging our desperate state? And I'd love to have a conversation with you about what do we do? I know your work with pioneers and with women has been and is a most vital response to all of this.
Well, it is, Janie. And, you know, all of the things that you name are true and real. And I think one of the strange legacies of our patriarchally biased culture is that we often don't give ourselves permission to fully feel. And I think that it's that lack of permission to let our emotions run through us that can result in a kind of despair and sort of a spiral into kind of somnambulance, you know, a kind of sleepwalking, or the tendency to, you know, to self-medicate in response. And I think, you know, one of my favorite reference points is that, you know, one of the best cures for despair is action. And I've come to understand emotion as the bridge between despair and action. You know, what I find, Janie, that echoes back.
I know, isn't it funny? Yeah.
It is. Well, it's coming and going. what I find is that, you know, I have to give myself permission to grieve, even listening to what you said to the Marines. You know, the idea of whales birthing underwater to sonar makes me want to wail. It's
yeah.
just horrifying. And it's really almost physically painful to me to know that we're doing that
yeah.
at this time. And at the same time, what I know is I can't take on every issue that I care about. And my feeling response is a part of my humanity. And so giving myself permission to feel as kicked in the belly as I do by imagining and knowing that that's happening, at the same time as I know about the degree of sexual abuse and rape and sex trafficking on Indian reservations in our own country, you know, at the same time as all the other things that you named. You know, for me, it's necessary to hold those truths on the one hand and to hold my vision and sense of the sacredness of life and my own understanding of my own purpose and what I'm here for in this moment in the other hand. And that to me offers me some way toward equanimity. You know, I tend to think that our goal of achieving balance is a faulty one because it's static. And in nature, there is no balance. There's just equilibrium. And it's constantly in motion. And it's almost, it's never Libra-esque, you know. It's never in perfect balance. It's all constantly in change and adjusting and adapting. And we're in a very changing world. And I tend to see much of those things that you named as the damage from the thrashing tail of a dying dinosaur. Because there is no doubt that our old way of conducting ourselves and our culture and our civilization in its entirety is undergoing massive shifts. And so what I also find really helpful is to recognize, you know, there's that principle that Lynn Twist, who's one of my favorite mentors and teachers, Lynn Twist teaches a great workshop called Fundraising from the Heart. And, of course, she wrote a book called The Soul of Money. And what she says is that what we appreciate appreciates. And that, therefore, I remind myself often that while on the one hand I have a responsibility to know what's going on, I also have a responsibility to my own purpose in being alive, my sense of a contract, if you will, with the sacred. And that is not to give so much of my time and attention to all the death and dying and crumbling and decay and violence that's going on, but to, you know, in the long run, to give more of my attention to the new world that's being born. And I think that as women, we have a particular familiarity with this juggling act of birth and death. You know, after all, we have creation in our bodies once a month. And very frequently, we have death and loss in our bodies also once a month. You know, until our elderhood. And then we visit with death and loss in other ways, and with birth in other ways. But we still, I find, even as a woman who is childless by choice, that I have a continual relationship with what's being born and what's dying. And that it's helpful to me to remember to make conscious those choices so that I can bring the fullness of my joy and celebration and creativity and will and anger and vision to the world that's being born. Because while we need people to hospice the old world, we need a lot of midwives and doulas to help give birth to the new one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's lovely. That's very comforting. It changes the focus.
Well, you know, it's also helpful to me to remember, Janie, that our culture is one that is particularly phobic about death. And that when I look toward, you know, some of the Hindu cultures and recognize that, you know, there are goddesses in other cultures from Africa and India that rule over the realm of death and rebirth. And that in those cultures, the death is necessary for the birth to happen. And at some point, I guess I am of the faith that says that Gaia is extraordinarily magical and mysterious and regenerative and adaptable and so, so much wiser and more complex than I think we have any idea of. So I guess, you know, I'm really from the Gaian faith. I mean, if there is a divine presence, I see it in Gaia. And I also see it in every aspect and every living creature on Gaia. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Even mm-hmm. those who are ordering the war games.
Ooh, yeah.
Which is the hardest to do.
Well, it's certainly a time, an unusual and an amazing sitting on the edge time.
It sure is. And, you know, it's the most interesting time I can imagine. And it's a time that I think demands much of us in terms of our own management of our own psyches and our own consciousness development.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You bet.
Yeah. Yeah,
and to pay attention, to learn to pay attention to just what's around you and what's happening and what words you hear, and I believe we're all being affected by a new energy that's entering us and bringing us into this other place.
I do too, and I find that for myself. I need to be paying exquisite attention to what's going on inside me as much as what's going on outside me, you know, so that I am very, I'm being meticulously mindful of what stories I perpetuate and what stories I'm shedding, you know, and my choice of words and how it either, you know, strengthens a belief system or helps diminish it and let it go away.
Yeah, could you example that?
Sure. Well, here's a very practical example. I went through a long process that I consider, I don't talk about this much, but I consider it to have been my own self-cultivation time. And I made myself a promise when I turned 40, which was 17 years ago, that I would find what I was born to do and become. And I went through a very rigorous time of a lot of writing and a lot of soul searching and a lot of meditating and a lot of group work and a lot of workshops. And somewhere along the way, I came to understand something. Actually, it was taught to me by a Peruvian shaman. And he said, ritual creates relationship. And I started to notice that each morning when I got out of my bathtub, I had a moment of seeing myself in the mirror when I judged my body harshly. And I realized that I didn't want to do that anymore. And that the way that I was judging myself was contributing to making myself small, not physically, but energetically.
Right.
And so I decided to make up a ritual to pour love into my body. Mm. And I made myself a body oil that I scent with a combination of three different essential oils. And ever since that day, every morning when I get out of a bath or shower, I spend less than 5 minutes rubbing my body with that oil. And as I do it, my inner meditation and my affirmation and my repetition to myself and my intention is to pour love into my body and to appreciate how it holds me and how it serves me and its strength and its sensuality and to love it. And in a weird way, it's helped me shift some of that internal self-judgment conditioning that I think as women, most of us have. I mean, it's not only helped me like my body better and be in better relationship to it, but I think it's helped me like my whole self better.
I can imagine that it would. What a wonderful ritual, and how wonderful to share it with us, because we could all do exactly that, and I'm envisioning doing it.
Well, great, please. Have at it. It's wonderful.
And I want to know what the three essential oils are that you use.
Well, again, I mean, it's probably particular to every woman,
sure.
And I don't know that anyone else would like the three that I chose.
Uh-huh.
But the three that I chose are grapefruit oil and rosemary and lemongrass.
Huh.
And so they're kind of stimulating and enlivening, and I love the scent of them together, and that's my mix.
Thank you.
Sure.
Well, you know, I do not pay a lot of attention to what I'm thinking, or, I mean, I'm really involved in thinking, but I've had a long period of being self-critical and paying attention, but unless I'm really plagued with something that's bothering me, I kind of don't do it. And I'm realizing that doing such a sweet thing for yourself would be very beneficial. Mm. I could just envision feeling all good all day long with that.
Well, it's nice. I mean, I try to catch myself even when I have a moment of road rage, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where, and here's another example. I mean, I noticed for many years, as I became more and more conscious about the impacts of living in a biased culture on women, first I went through years of feeling sort of angry and victim-y. And I was kind of petulant, I think, in retrospect, because I was so pissed off to realize how I had been impacted by systems that I had no control over. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, I'm not very proud of those years, but I understand them as a need, as a part of my arc of learning, because what I realized was that the best way, and this is true in my marriage as well, every time I wanted to change something and I would try to change him, I would fail, of course. You know, anyone in any kind of couple relationship would tell you the same thing. And of course, my learning was to keep turning on myself and to see what can I change in me. And what, you know, I realized I was so tired. I got to the point where I was so tired of feeling like an angry victim. And I realized that actually I could change my own story.
Hmm.
And that by changing my own inner story, this is part of what we do in our Cultivating Women's Leadership trainings, is to really unpack the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. And I realized I went from believing that I was supporting my husband's vision with Bioneers to seeing myself as a character in a story, to then being able to see myself as the protagonist in the story, to then realizing, oh, ho, ho, if I really give myself this authority, I can be the author of my own story.
You might as well take it, right?
Well, absolutely. Who else would you want to have it?
Right.
You know? And really, we get to write it. So what a tremendous opportunity that is. But, you know, it was through a lot of years and a lot of ritual and a lot of being rigorous with myself about my own thinking and seeing and unpacking my unconscious, implicit stuff.
I want to interrupt and say you're listening to Nina Simons of Bioneers and Cultivating Women's Leadership, which we're going to be talking about in a moment. So all is not lost.
Oh, I don't think all is lost at all. I mean, I think that much is lost. I think, you know, we recently had a board meeting where one of our board members said we were talking about the theme for this year's Bioneers Conference, and the theme is growing a movement, the world we want and how to get there. Hmm. And one of our board members said, the world we want is no longer possible. And there was this moment of deep gravity and silence at the table because there is a tremendous amount of loss going on.
Yeah.
And there is no turning back the clock on that, you know. And I don't imagine we are going to see flourishing coral reefs in our lifetimes. But life is tremendously mysterious and inventive and creative and adaptive. And I believe that as women, we actually have the responsibility and the opportunity and the creativity to help give birth to the new world. And I think we are doing that as we speak, you know. One of the most exciting things to me to observe in the last few years, Janie, is how from President Carter to, you know, Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun to the UN, everyone is acknowledging that the biggest shifts happening around the world are happening as a result of the leadership of diverse grassroots women, you know, and you look at the story of what happened in Liberia and women connecting across faiths in order to bring down a corrupt warlord and elect a woman president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's miraculous. Who would have believed that possible?
It's true.
You know, or Wangari Maathai, yeah, mobilizing millions of women across the continent of Africa to plant trees. I mean, it's stunning what women have been accomplishing. And, you know, there's little doubt in my mind. I mean, if you scan the nonprofit world in this country, you would see that a disproportionate number of the leadership are now women.
Hmm.
And if you look at the groups that are mobilizing on the ground to help grow community and build community resilience, you know, groups like up there, you have Passion into Action and See Jane Doe, and, you know, but all over the country with Transition Towns and with BALI, the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, and with Slow Money, there are groups organizing in local communities that are predominantly, not entirely, but largely led by women.
It's,
you know, even in our Bioneers Resilient Communities Network, which at this point is about 23 communities throughout the country, who organize conferences in their local communities to feature the leadership of the people in that community within a Bioneers context and framework, and to show the DVDs of our plenaries, about 70% of those leaders are women.
Hmm.
So I don't think it's an accident. I do think that we are designed to be connective tissue in community. You know, I don't think it's an accident that there's a tremendous history of women being herbalists and midwives and doulas and hospice workers. We're connected to the cycles of death and rebirth. And I think that we all know that the earth is calling to us now. and that this is the time to sort of get over our stuff and get connected and get effective.
Right, right. Well, if you consider that that our history is, of course, women were the leaders for thousands of years.
Of course.
Living in egalitarian ways, but they were the wise women. And the wise elders, this is a piece that I talk about, bringing in back the wisdom of the grandmother, of grandmothers coming forth and daring to say, no more. You know, the what you see happening and the shifts in leadership is on one level. However, there is this other level that goes on no matter what happens. The people who control the war games and the bombs and the corporate whatevers. And are we going to, how does that shift? That's because they seem to be very untouchable, their power.
I don't think they are untouchable at all. They're very powerful. They certainly have a whole heck of a lot of money, and they've rejiggered the game to be highly, highly tilted in their favor. But that being said, I also really believe, Janie, that we are heading for a popular uprising that may be global, that may really actually be global.
Mm-hmm. That's very exciting.
It is. It's tremendously exciting. And I think, perhaps because of the internet, it can be global.
And it certainly has to be women leading it.
Well, it has to be everybody, but I do think it has to be women at the helm.
It has to be women's wisdom. It has to be the things that you're talking about, being connected to nature and diversity and egalitarianism, all of those things.
Well, absolutely. I think it has to be a revolution in what leadership is and looks like at the same time as it's amassing a huge popular movement.
You know, we all know what's good and what's right on some deep level that protects life. And I just, as I mentioned before, I've interviewed Medea Benjamin, and she talks about there needs to be a group that isn't, a movement that's not affiliated with any party.
Yep.
And, I'm thinking, well, how can we do this? What would the appeal look like? Let's say we decided we're going to do it. How would we do it?
With a lot of creativity and flexibility, that's for sure. I think we're already gathering clues about how to do it. Eve Ensler says, don't brand it, expand it. Right? And when she launched from her hospital bed, when she launched her 1 billion rising effort all over the world, it wasn't called V-Day 1 billion rising for very good reason. It was called 1 billion rising so that every woman in every country who danced on behalf of ending violence against women could feel like they owned it. And some women danced the dance that her choreographer had designed, and some women danced dances of their own nationalities and histories. It didn't matter. But there were women dancing all over the world, I think something like 238 countries. An amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
And while Eve was in her hospital bed, she also had this reawakening about the sacredness of nature. She's going to be speaking at Bioneers this year, and she went through this horrifying bout with cancer, and I think they removed something like 7 of her organs. And she's been through this huge transformation, and while she was going through that, she made friends with a tree that was outside of her hospital window, and that tree became her ally. And suddenly, and she really had this epiphany about not only the sacredness of nature, but that what we're doing to ourselves is exactly a reflection, with cancer, with toxicity, is exactly a reflection of what we're doing to the Earth's body. And that our human bodies and the Earth's body are one body. And so, I think Eve is one of many people who are laying the groundwork for a global uprising. And I had this vision listening to Eve, and I realized, oh, my gosh, what if the stand was to stand on behalf of life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's pretty universal.
And very...
On behalf of the sacredness of life.
You bet.
And it doesn't have to be what's right and what's wrong. It doesn't have to be, you know, I think the invitation has to be as inclusive as it possibly can be. Because we need, you know, I used to think because I was alive in the 60s that it would be millions of people in the streets. And it may be millions of people in the streets, but I think it will also be millions of people writing letters and organizing in their own communities and on email and on Facebook and, you know, all the other ways that people are doing it. I think that actually when we really gather the fullness of people who are prepared to make a stand on behalf of the sacredness of life, I actually think the Koch brothers pale in comparison.
May it be so.
Indeed, may it be so.
You know, I'm going to see if the phone lines work in case someone does want to call in.
Okay.
The telephone number here is 937-2039. So if you'd like to speak to Nina, this is your moment. 937-2039. Well, this women's leadership training that you've been doing with your two other leaders for the last, 8 years?
Yep.
Would you like to talk about it? And that you have a training coming up. We have a training come up in May, but it's too late to register for that. So
right. We do have one other training coming this year, and it'll be in July, from July 21st to 26th. And the deadline for applying for it is June 1st. The training's called Cultivating Women's Leadership, and it's really a six-day residential deep dive that has a number of different purposes. We gather together a group of 20 women who are selected to be not only women who have passion and vision and capacity to affect change in their communities, but also women who are as different in every way as we can possibly put together. And that means ranging in age from 20s up through 70s or 80s and at least 30% women of color in every training, and usually it's now more like 40%. And women working on every different discipline and in every sector, and women of every orientation. And it's very exciting because I realize each time that we gather how rare it is to be among a group of high dynamic, highly intelligent, and focused women peers who have that much difference among us. And it helps me recognize that I think part of what Cultivating Women's Leadership is about is practicing connecting across the fields of difference that our society tends to segregate us into. Because I think part of that great global uprising means connecting across difference. And what else we do, you know, our goals with Cultivating Women's Leadership are to give each woman an opportunity to really clarify her own sense of purpose or that unique assignment that really only you were born to do.
How do you do that?
Well, we do it with a lot of different techniques, actually. We do it with a lot of storytelling and repeated questioning. We invite women to reflect on their lives and recognize which experiences have brought them the greatest joy. When was a time in your life, I might ask anyone who's listening, when you felt that all of you was being used well? Notice that. That's a really important clue. And let's see what else. You know, we unpack the whole question about leadership so that we can really explore what women, we as women, are uniquely bringing to the reinvention of leadership at this time. And, we do all kinds of things. You know, we use art, We use a lot of embodied experience. We use movement. So it's really designed so that really whether you're a visual learner or an auditory learner or a kinesthetic learner, you know, there is something that will work for you in this training. And what we found is that there's a rather magical, very dimensional and deep thing that happens with women there. And part of it happens as we witness each other coming into our fullness.
That's what I was thinking, that the sharing and witnessing must be very powerful.
It is. It's very beautiful. And, you know, it keeps changing me every single time I do it. And really, you know, as co-facilitators, we see ourselves really as, you know, doulas or midwives. We don't feel like the leaders there. We're all leaders there. And part of what's beautiful is how any woman in the circle can bring forth anything that they know is correct to bring forth at any given time. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's structured and it's magical and it's quite profound. And I think one of the things that I've really learned from it, Janie, that I'm super excited about in terms of what gives us hope and what's the next big work on my plate is that after 8 years, we have about 300 women who are alumna of Cultivating Women's Leadership, and they're extraordinary women. And, you know, for the first several years, I'm such a networker and such a connection maker that, you know, I would finish a training and I would be like, oh, I've got to introduce this one from this training to that one from that training because they'll have so much in common and they'll be really mutually supportive. Well, in the last few years, it's just gotten so there are too many of them, and my inner Rolodex is just too full. And what I realized is that for several years, I've been bemoaning the fact that while there are networks for women in politics and networks for women in media and networks for women in education, there is not a network in this country for grassroots women leaders, which is a crazy thing because everyone understands, starting with the old example of the good old boys network, that networks help to advance leadership. And around the world, the leadership that is proving most effective is the leadership of diverse grassroots women leaders. So somehow I'm going to step into that assignment this year. I'm not completely sure how, but I think that that's one of the great things that we as women bring is we don't have to know the how, we have to know the what, and that the how will follow.
So your focus will be how to set up networks, how to.
Well, you know, I think what I'm going to do first is I'm going to convene a group of women, of diverse women grassroots leaders, to help brainstorm together, or I like to call it heartstorming, actually, what a network would have to look like and how it might function in such a way that it would not be a burnout. And it would not be another encumbrance for women who already have too much on our plates. Because I know that it would have to be somewhat open sourced. You know, it's that delicate balance of process and goals, right? Mm. I've come to understand that I think we need democratic process. But we also need hierarchy in order to get things done. So how do we find, you know, how do we find the right balance of those two? How do we let the masculine and the feminine within ourselves dance in such a way that, you know, we hope it's not going to just fly out the window, this network idea. We hope that maybe we can in some way serve as a hub so that there is an online version that has teleconferences when people want them and access to media and chat rooms and edgy conversations. And there are also will be opportunities to meet in person because that's necessary too.
Sure.
But somehow, you know, what I see is that we need more connective tissue than we currently have. And it's part of what I believe you're doing, Janie, and people like you in doing beautiful work like Women's Voices.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And you know, I'm doing this, I've met lots and lots of wonderful women from very differing backgrounds.
I bet.
And to bring that all together. I hope you keep me please do keep me posted. I'm very interested in this because I think it's key to moving ahead. We need to come together.
Yeah, we do. We do, and we can't afford this, you know, multiple phased, segregated versions of feminist movements anymore. We just can't. And, you know, and to my way of thinking, I actually feel like we're in this giant reinvention of what it means to be a woman, and what does the feminine and masculine mean within each and all of us anyway? Because honestly, as damaged as women has been from the patriarchy, I have no question that men have been at least equally damaged by it.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah.
Their feminine has been needed to be submerged. They had to deny their love for their own mother. All of that.
All of that. And, you know, it was partly through, you know, you quoted Genevieve Vaughn at the beginning of the show. And she's also an amazing teacher to me. And it was partly through her that I learned really one of my favorite examples from Indigenous culture, which is that, you know, the Iroquois Six Nations, in their own name, are called the Haudenosaunee.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thousands of years old. And, of course, when the suffragettes in upstate New York were looking for an example of where is women's wisdom valued, they found it in their own backyard with the Haudenosaunee. And to this day, the women have a longhouse and the men have a longhouse. And the women elders select the chief, the male chief, for the people. And they select them by watching the little boys until they're 7 years old. They watch them very closely. And they watch them to see which of them has the nobility of spirit, which of them has the generosity and the empathy and the clarity of mind and the quickness of body, which of them has all those traits. And those elder women not only select the chiefs, but they have the option to depose a chief at any time if they feel he's not serving what's best for the people. So there's a balance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And one of my native teachers, a woman who was also from that tradition, actually said to me many years ago, it's what got me interested in economics. And this year at Bioneers Conference, it's our 25th anniversary, by the way. It's going to be a fantastic conference. And the day after the conference, we're going to have a day-long intensive called Feminomics. And we did that 2 years ago, and Jen Vaughn actually came. And she, who has been such a great proponent of the gift economy for so long, and we really, you know, we had that day-long event to really look at and name what are the uprising of women into leadership and the feminine principle and the integration of nature into the equation, how are those three sources braiding together to reinvent economics that work for all? And it's not just a women's event, it's an everybody event, but it's exciting because I think we have to name these things. I think it's not an accident that our whole economic system is up for reinvention and that decentralization is the key. And we're getting many of our cues and clues from nature and from women's leadership.
Well, again, if you consider that we lived in harmony, as the gift economy tells us, without exchange, it was a gift.
Yeah,
and that's how you did it, and that was the person who gave the most was admired the most, and it was just a way of life, and it worked beautifully. We didn't need money.
No, and we valued caring, and we valued mothering, and all of those things that are necessary for a healthy whole life.
Right, yeah. Right. So So we're waking up.
We sure are. You know, Charles Eisenstein is going to come and speak at our Feminomics Intensive, and he calls it the new story of interbeing, or the reunion. And it's a beautiful story, you know. I think we've all chosen to be alive on Earth at this time, to bring each our own unique gift to this huge reinvention. And it's going to take all of us.
Yeah, and I trust that we all will be awakened. You know, it's not just us making this happen. We have wonderful help.
We sure do.
Our mother is right there.
Yes. Yeah. In many, many forms, and it's helpful to remember and invite it in.
Yes. Nina, thank you so much. It's been lovely speaking with you.
And you too, Janie. Thank you so much.
Yes, and I look forward to all that you're doing, and may it spread and spread.
And thank you for your beautiful flame and your connective tissue.
Thank you so much.
Be well till next time, Janie.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land. We are loving.